You're listening to Nashville Public Radio. I'm Jason Moon Wilkins. The Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum turns 50 this year, but it may never have made it to year one without the unlikely leadership of two women in an industry dominated by men. It wasn't just the industry. In 1967, men were entrenched at the top of the country charts. Even an artist who would go on to become an icon had to start with a novelty song about stereotypes.
Just because I'm blonde, don't think I'm done, 'cause this dumb blonde ain't nobody's home.
Dolly Parton's first solo single was a minor hit, but she would go on to a major career that found her in the Hall of Fame in 1999. The year that Dumb Blonde was released, the institution opened its museum, and two women, unknown to anyone outside the industry, were featured in an opening night telecast.
Mrs. Frances Preston and Mrs. Joe Walker.
Preston and Walker were key to bringing the museum to life, but even on the night celebrating their accomplishments, they were still treated with a mixture of respect and condescension.
We'll take that opportunity to say that right now because you're going to be a busy girl throughout the evening because there are lots of top stars here and you'll be talking to the writers, the stars, the producers, everybody.
That's right, as well as our local citizens who've contributed so much to make this possible.
Right.
That busy girl was the Nashville vice president for one of the most important music companies in the world, and by all accounts, the driving force that made sure the doors were paid for, much less opened that night. The other woman, whose work was just as important, but who remained more in the background, was Joe Walker. That evening, while Preston stood out front wearing a ball gown and a sky-high bouffant, Walker appeared on screen in a jacket, introducing items from the artifacts case.
A banjo of Burl Ives, a banjo of Earl Scruggs, the original auto harp used by Sarah Carter.
Walker was head of the relatively young Country Music Association, which helped create the museum. She started as an assistant at the CMA and never imagined she would run the association just 10 months later when the original director walked away. As she remembered in a 1996 interview, she assumed they would hire another man.
That's what they said they were going to do. We're looking for a man. I mean, that's the way they put it.
But you said you didn't particularly...
I didn't think anything about that at all.
It's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
But another influential woman in country music suggested that Walker should run the show.
Miss Minnie Pearl.
Howdy! I'm just so proud to be here.
I was told by someone, it was Minnie Pearl, who said to the board in a discussion about it, why are we looking for someone else? Why don't we just make Joe the executive director? She's doing all the work anyway. And everybody said, well, why not? We just hadn't thought about it in those terms.
One of the first big projects Walker had to take on was establishing the museum. It was an idea born from the 1964 World's Fair in New York. They had requested a country music exhibit that Frances Preston had drawn up in the shape of a guitar. But she and others paused that plan and decided instead to build a more permanent place in Nashville. New York not only provided the inadvertent inspiration for the museum, but it was also a source for some of the early fundraising. Joe Walker remembers that support was sometimes lacking from the business community back home.
You know, it was pretty difficult to get the City Fathers in those early days of CMA to, they thought of us as more or less kind of a bunch of unwashed hillbillies out here on Music Row.
But Walker says that Preston was known for twisting influential arms and squeezing money, even from some in the city who saw the genre as an embarrassment. The museum's longtime CEO, Kyle Young, says that role continued long after her work with the Hall of Fame.
As we're sitting here now and we're seeing the city just flourish, and it's the It City and so on and so forth, it's hard to think of anyone who had more impact than Frances on not only developing the industry, but also connecting the industry to the community.
From the beginning of her career, Preston was recognized as a business trailblazer, but she did not see herself as part of the women's liberation movement of the time. In an interview from 1974, Preston refused to believe women were limited by glass ceilings or closed executive doors.
I have not found that a door has been closed to me because I was a woman, and I started out long before a lot of other people decided that doors were closed to them. I think being a woman, I got the door open. But if I had not been a business person and had not known what I was doing, I couldn't have kept the door open.
Over her career, Preston would help turn royalty collection giant BMI into one of Nashville's biggest employers. She herself was inducted into the hall in 1992 and died a decade later. Walker went on to lead the CMA for nearly 30 years. Later known as Joe Walker Metter, she established the CMA's long-running award show and helped build the CMA Fest. She passed away this summer at the age of 93. On that opening night telecast, Walker made what would turn out to be a modest prediction.
We expect thousands of people to come through the museum each year.
Last year, at its current downtown location, nearly 1.2 million people walked through the doors Francis Preston and Joe Walker Metter helped open 50 years ago. For Nashville Public Radio, I'm Jason Moon Wilkins. That's your-